you could win a free vacation. Look for the giveaway ad in the Texarkana Gazette and visit one of the listed local businesses to register. True Crime Texarkana is brought to you by J.E. Bonding, Texarkana, Arkansas's premier bail bond company. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, J.E. Bonding can handle all your bail bond needs. Agent Mark Luckett will provide you with fast, courteous service and do his best to help you through a trying time. Mark has all the experience you need to make the best of a sad situation. That's why he likes to say, two tears in the bucket, call Mark Luckett. Call him at 903-748-1402 or visit J.E. Bonding at 2315 East Street near the Miller County Sheriff's Office and Detention Center. That's 903-748-1402. It's been more than 40 years since their father found siblings Karen and Gordon Alexander brutally attacked in their Texarkana, Arkansas home. 13-year-old Gordon, dead on the scene, was found in a pool of blood. Karen, 14, spent 3 days in the intensive care unit at St. Michael's Hospital before dying of brain injuries. The case has never been solved. But now, those who never forgot the horrifying crime, including a retired police captain, have new hope that justice can finally be served. This is True Crime Texarkana, the Alexander Children Murders. Reporter Mallory Wyatt continues her look at the case.
For me, this all started in September 2022 with a sticky note, and it quickly snowballed from there. Gazette Features editor Carl Richter and I first met with retired police captain Calvin Seward at the Bi-State Justice Building late that year. Calvin was skeptical of us and very guarded, but he said that we could contact him and keep in touch, depending on how things were going. If you ask him, he'll say that he was quite gruff and mean. I didn't quite get that, but sometimes I miss signals. All of my newspaper research took me to Texarkana College Library, where I spent hours poring over microfilms. The library is the only source of microfilms for the Texarkana Gazette from the mid-1800s to the early 2000s. Carl then scheduled a time for us to meet with Velvet Hall Cool at the Museum of Regional History to look at city directories from the early 1980s. Now, these directories weren't your typical flimsy yellow pages with eye-catching advertisements. These were beautifully bound, black leather books with yearly updates about Texarkana in the front with gorgeous photos. From there, I made a list of the houses in the Alexander's neighborhood and who lived there, along with a few adjacent streets, so I could feel like I had covered enough ground. The directories cross-reference residents' names and addresses and include other information, people's names and careers, whether they were retired or if they were widowed. I started building family trees with Ancestry.com and sorting out historical information about each resident. I found there were lots of connections between neighbors, which Calvin affirmed later on. It soon made sense to me why everybody in Carmichael Hill knew everybody else. Family ties between neighbors. Even now, those ties are strong on the hill. Once, as I visited the neighborhood looking for people to talk to about the case, a kitten ran across the road in front of my car. I stopped to pick it up and find its owners, who actually turned out to be three generations of the same family. And families are some of the last remaining stores of information about the Alexander murders. Not many people can speak to the case firsthand anymore. Most often now, people tell stories handed down like heirlooms from those who have passed on. While the ultimate enemy here is the killer, the other is time. The more time passes, the more evidence slips away. Let's go back to 1981 for just a moment. It's been less than a week since Karen and Gordon were attacked, and Texarkana residents and police were on edge. According to Detective Captain Jim Cowart, 30 blue trucks had been inspected by police. And according to Detective Lieutenant Richard Giles, 150 people had been interviewed, and the department had received over 200 calls from members of the public offering to help. The appalling crime brought displays of charity and unity, with the Alexander parents receiving financial donations and condolence cards. An anonymous donor offered $2,000 for information on the murders. Union workers at Cooper Tire, where Weldon worked, added $1,000 to the reward. The crime also brought deviant behavior out of the woodwork, with exhibits of depravity and lies. Two people confessed to the murders during the first week, a Gazette report said. One person was found to have mental health problems and ruled unconnected to the crime. Another man was charged with being drunk and disorderly at a club after he bragged about cutting the kids' throats. He was found to have nothing to do with the case as well. An Arkansas man reportedly cost the police 10 hours of investigating time. Cowart said the man would be charged once the investigation into the murders was complete. The man gave a detailed description of a truck he falsely said he had seen at the house around the time of the attack. Two or three other people also gave fraudulent information regarding the crime. I asked Dr. Todd Steffi why someone would make false confessions to a murder, especially when there are serious consequences involved.
I was told fairly early on about some false confessions that were made. And You know, it's hard for some people to imagine that someone would falsely admit to something criminal. But there are, it's not probably as unusual as what you would think. There have even been some very high profile cases in more recent years where the same thing occurred, where someone came forward and admitted to a crime that it turns out they were absolutely excluded as a possibility of being the perpetrator.
I couldn't help also asking this question. Why would someone do this to two innocent kids?
In a case where this obviously involves not just a child, but two children, I think most people would say that is particularly horrific. And To even think about doing such a thing would make most people uncomfortable at best, if not just repulsed, you know, downright repulsed, to even think about doing such a thing. So a lot of times when a crime like this is so horrific, so repulsive, then it could be that it's a perpetrator who is more psychopathic or sociopathic in nature. They may not have remorse like you or I would have remorse.
On April 23rd, Vera Alexander spoke out for the first time to Gazette reporter John Fowkes. The grieving mother still had hope that police would find the man that committed the crimes against her children. Vera said, quote, "I think they are in a better place than we are now, but the way they went is no way for anybody to go." She also expressed sympathy for the police, who were working around the clock. Her hopes were that the culprit would be captured and end up in the electric chair.
It's exhausting, and And yet, I think probably it's that may be the very thing that that I would sort of tip my hat to the Texarkana Police Department on the front end. As old as this case is, I think there were some great things done on the front end. And those long days that they worked on the front end might be why we have so much to work with now, all these years later.
Fowkes learned from police that a witness helped them create a composite sketch of a suspect, which began getting circulated around town. A latent fingerprint was also discovered by the Arkansas State Crime Lab. A later report by Jim Powell said the person in the sketch was seen talking with Karen in the days leading up to the attack. Cowart said police wished to speak with the man who resembled, to quote him, 6 feet to 6 foot 3 inches tall, very slender build, shoulder-length brown hair, and a prominent nose. The man was seen speaking with Karen at a laundromat near East and Hayes Street. He had no facial hair and wore a brown Western hat and cowboy boots made of black and white snake skin. A little over a month after the attacks, Fowkes met with Weldon and Vera after they moved across town. Weldon said moving typically wasn't difficult for him, but this time was. The last time he had visited the home where his children were victimized was at the end of April. Weldon remembered that his children were happy there and that his neighbors were kind. He recalled spots of blood on the ceiling, a freshly scrubbed sink, and the rumpled bed that he found his daughter in. He was also able to grab a watch that Karen enjoyed wearing and Gordon's collection of sports magazines that he loved. Weldon said, quote, forgetting is the problem when you've never seen anything like that before or had something like that happen to you. It's a shock that goes deep. Weldon said when he first came home and found Karen, he initially thought that she was dead. Quote, the knife was stuck straight up at the top of her head and her little face and throat was covered in blood. Weldon explained that he carefully used his forefinger and thumb to lift the knife out of her head, and then his daughter began to mumble. He then ran to the kitchen to find Gordon. He said that blood was everywhere and that he yelled his son's name multiple times, but he knew that Gordon was gone. Vera remained silent during this interview. Her husband said her epileptic seizures had been worsened by the tragedy. She was going from 3 or 4 times a year to now having them every other day. Weldon was to return to work in a few weeks. He and his wife were under a doctor's care to help them get their lives in order. The newspapers, TV, or radio didn't mention Karen and Gordon again until the new year turned, which brought attention back to the murders for a short time. It wasn't until a few years later that the Alexander murders yet again made headlines. That's when a disheveled drifter with a glass eye added Karen and Gordon to a grim list, the hundreds of people he claimed to have killed. His name was Henry Lee Lucas.
Pleaded guilty. Henry Lee Lucas says he killed several people near Waco, Texas.
When Arlington finished with Henry Lee Lucas, it had 2 cases cleared.
He claims more than 100 women have died at his hand.
A man who claims he has killed over 300 people.
If you know of any information regarding the Alexander murders, call retired police captain Calvin Seward at 903-826-4702 or email him at the address in the show notes. No detail is too small, and it may just lead to closure in this case. The story will continue in future episodes of True Crime Texarkana. True Crime Texarkana is a Texarkana Gazette podcast created in Star Bear Studio right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. Mallory Wyatt reported and wrote the show. Carl Richter produced, edited, and contributed vocals. Chris Finley composed the main theme music. To support the show, leave a 5-star review wherever you listen.